All right, here to introduce our next speaker, we have Matt Brannigan of Young, Gifted, and Black, a leader of the Movement for Racial Justice in Madison. The Movement for Racial Justice in America starts right here at home. And I want you to put your hands together and welcome Matt Brannigan.
Double team them.
All right.
All right.
Can I get an all power to the people? So, Kevin Alexander Gray. I'd like to say he's written about things that we've collectively forgotten. Or especially over the last 30 years that recently, personally, we've been involved in an awakening this past year from a lot of things that he's written about. From police brutality and violence, workers' rights, activism, and more. Diversity of issues that when it comes down, you have to do more than just support these issues that concern Black America. You have to put skin in the game. And especially here in Madison, when we have some of the largest racial disparities in the country, we have a lot of work to do. So you must act as an individual. You must turn to yourself and turn to your neighbors. You must support and engage the Black community here. You must turn out as much on Juneteenth Day as you do here. You must turn out and support and listen and engage with our Black community. So I got a question up here. Somebody just said, what is Juneteenth Day? That is when slaves were officially free. In Texas, huh? So Kevin Alexander Gray has spoken and lived quite a life. Was the South Carolina coordinator of the 88 Jackson campaign. A little humble brag, my father was the coordinator for Wisconsin in the 88 Jackson campaign, Jesse Jackson. He's a founding member of the Rainbow Coalition, written for Counterpunch, Washington Post, Emerge, and the Progressive Magazine, and more. Spoken and written about anti-war movements, really, when you want to talk about it, and ending a new war, or an old war, the war on drugs. About the continued violence and white terror on Black bodies, and has written most recently, Killing Trayvons. So you know, there are many Trayvon Martins, about one every 28 hours. So I'd like Madison to give a very bold and welcome reception to Kevin Alexander Gray.
I ain't gonna mess with you about that Juneteenth thing. They said the enslaved Africans got the word late in Texas, and Texas is still that far behind. Now, y'all, I'm gonna do something a little different. First of all, I'm just gonna give you a report about what's going on in South Carolina, because it's been a challenging year for us in South Carolina. But I have to thank Ruth and the Progressive, because they always give me unconditional love and a place to write, even when I miss deadlines, which is often. You know, listen, I tell you, someone reminded me the other day, I write for Progressive and for Counterpunch, and it's not that many Black writers that write for national magazines. So I do recognize how much of an opportunity and a challenge and a responsibility it is to tell the truth as I see it, hopefully as you see it, from where I'm at. And in the last year in South Carolina, it's been a challenging year. I haven't had a time to write a lot because we've been dealing with the flag coming down. And that flag came down because of the tragedy in Charleston. A lot of us fought hard. We picketed, boycotted. I burned the flag with some friends back in 2000 on Confederate Memorial Day. It's been a fight to get that flag down, but martyrs got it down. And so I want to give that report about the people that died in Charleston. And I want to tie that to our progressive movement and why we're here today and what we're about. Because I think it's important as we move forward that we understand as progressives that we have to set the standard, that we have to be consistent, that we have to challenge power, that we have to challenge our friends and family, even in the midst of tragedy. And I think what happened in Charleston, and especially, you know, I knew Clemente Pinckney. And, you know, you meet a lot of politicians. This has been a lot here that, you know, when they say something, you know, they're speaking truth to power. They're speaking truth. But Clemente Pinckney, that young man was one of those people. The fact that Dylann Roof, a young man, could get that close to that man, could go into a Wednesday night Bible study and sit next to people and sit next to a state senator and kill that man, but he sat next to that man all through that Bible study. That is a testament to the kind of man he was. That's a testament to the kind of church that was. And forgive me if I get emotional about it, because it is close to home. A lot of people ask me why I stay in South Carolina. Well, my father's from South Carolina. But the reality is that for most black folk, most African Americans in America, their ancestors come through South Carolina. Sullivan's Island is their Ellis Island. You can't meet too many black people in America who don't have links to South Carolina. When we say that South Carolina is the ideological home of white supremacy, somebody has to be there to fight that. Some people have to understand that that heritage of enslavement, of kidnapping, people often stand up on stage and they say America is the land of immigrants. Well, America is the land of immigrants and descendants of kidnappees, and most of them come in through South Carolina. So it's important that people understand that history. So I've been speaking a lot around South Carolina. I haven't had time to write. I wrote some notes. I have a speech. I probably won't stick to it. I want to do something with y'all that we've been doing in South Carolina. I spoke in Charleston a couple of weeks ago behind Reverend Barber, which is, you know, that's like speaking behind Jim Hightower, but I spoke. And we've been trying to elevate the names of the martyrs. So I'm going to try something with y'all. I spoke at the State House in South Carolina on the 4th of July. And I want to try something with y'all. I want y'all to not leave me up here hanging out. I'm going to mention the names, say the names of the martyrs of Emmanuel Church. And after I say their names, I want y'all to all respond, may his or her soul rest in peace, power, freedom, and love. You got that? I'm going to say their names. I know it's going to be rough when you get started. But may her or his soul rest in peace, power, freedom, and love. Y'all, can y'all handle that? Tawanza Sanders. Freedom and love. Cynthia Hurd. Sharonda Singleton. Myra Thompson. Daniel Simmons. DePayne Middleton Doctor. Clemente Pinckney. Susie Jackson. Thank y'all. And their families too. A lot of people forget that there were three people that were left alive when Dylann Roof arrived at that church and he said, I came here to kill black people. And when he left one person alive, he said to that person, Miss Sanders, I'm here so you can tell the story. And that's the story that needs to be told. You know, the flag is down, but the fight goes on. because the fight is about the underpinnings of racism and white supremacy in this country. The foundation of the progressive movement is fighting that racism, that there's no master race, no enslaved race, no superior race, no lesser race, no exceptional nation, no chosen people, no people who are genetically predisposed to rule, commit crimes, be poor, be rich, have less intelligence, or have a lesser or greater work ethic than anybody. The foundation of the freedom struggle, the foundation of the progressive struggle, is to oppose judging, punishing, and abusing people because of their skin color or any other genetic or biological factor. That's what we're about. That's the movement that we have to integrate into who we are and how we deal with the politics of this country. It's when the campaign bus pulls up to our communities, that's what we expect out of our politicians. We expect them to understand that our fight is to end skin privilege and racism in this country. Our movement is connected to the abolitionist movement and the civil rights movement and the peace movement. Our movement is about ending this idea of second-class citizenship and bridging the gap between race and class and man-made borders and respecting human rights here and abroad. Now, when the campaign bus pulls up, that's what we talk about, respecting people's rights, respecting people's humanity, both here and abroad, challenging the politicians on that, challenging them on the fact that every 20 years in the history of this country, there's been nothing but war. War. We're paying for war. What happened to that peace dividend? Why is it that we pay $1.5 million per troop, per tour in Afghanistan and Iraq? Why is it that my generation and my kids' generation and my grandkids' generation have to face the prospect of endless war, this idea of empire, this idea that America is supposedly the greatest country on the earth? Well, it could be. It could be. If it lives up to its creed. Now, we all know, as I said, that this country was founded on genocide. People don't want to hear it. You know, we're founded on genocide and slavery. I don't know if you can clap the genocide and slavery. Yep. And there's a lot of people in this audience, as there are a lot of people out there walking the streets, that realize, as I've started with talking about the Charleston 9, that martyrs have moved us forward in this country. And that's what those people are. Martyrs have moved us forward, like the martyrs we just finished. It was 52 years ago, I believe, that those four little girls were killed in Birmingham. And martyrs moved us forward. It was 50 years ago when Martin Luther King and John Lewis crossed that bridge in Selma. And people like Viola Luiso died, martyrs. They moved us forward. And we have to understand that. But the time for change in this country is now. We have to start organizing. We have to be about what happens after the martyrs give their lives. We have to go out and reach out to communities and organize in communities and do teach-ins and engage people. We have to understand, I mean, these kids will say Black Lives Matter, and they're right, and Palestinian Lives Matter, and all lives matter. We got to be clear about that. We've got to demand that this country move to a place that's more sustainable. War is not sustainable. The truth of the matter is, when you look at the history of empires, they don't last. People don't want to accept the idea that America is an empire and that we have troops all over the world and that we indoctrinate our kids into violence and that we're a nation of violence. I went to Clemente Pinckney's funeral and I saw Barack Obama, and a lot of people said that was a great speech, and I thought it was okay speech. President Obama grabbed the podium before he started to sing Amazing Grace, and he kind of shook a little bit. And I thought, okay, well, maybe he's trying to reach his inner Southern black man. And then he started singing Amazing Grace. And I thought about it a little bit. Amazing Grace, a song written by a slave ship captain. Amazing Grace. A song written by a slave ship captain that was accepted by the slaves, by the enslaved Africans that took that song in as their own. A longing to be accepted by the enslaver. And the enslavers, in their truest hearts, wanting to be accepted by those they oppressed. And that's where redemption comes in. There are a lot of people after that horrible tragedy that talked about revenge. And the greatest thing that happened was the family talked about love. The family talked about love and forgiveness. I went to Charleston and people were saying, well, he's a terrorist. He needs a death penalty. A lot of people that you would think were progressive. And I said, no. First of all, as progressives, we're against the expansion of the use of the term terrorism, terrorist, and the war on terror. We were supposedly against the Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act, and now we want to expand the use of the term. Well, if it were a black guy, they'd charge him with terrorism. Well, we don't want equal injustice for all. There are people, give him the death penalty. Well, look who's on death row. Who do you think is going to bear the brunt of that if we expand the death penalty? I think murderer is a strong enough word. Try him. Put him in jail for the rest of his life. But this idea is progressives and so-called liberals at a moment of madness and anger, supporting the death penalty, supporting the expansion of the use of the word terrorist in this country? No. We've got to be like those families. They were bigger than everybody. I spoke at a rally with the new Black Panthers, and they showed up, marched in with guns, and we need revenge. We need to finish the job that Denmark Vesey started. We need to kill all the goddamn slave masters and all their descendants. And first thing I thought was, are you a police? You telling people to kill people? Progressives are about peace. And as corny as it sounds, progressives ought to be about love. I mean, I'm getting a little older, and maybe I'm getting softer. But what is it? I mean, Dr. King gave his life for love. What greater thing can you give to your brother and your brothers and sisters but your love and your understanding and seeing them as real human beings? That's what I've learned this summer in the tragedy that happened in South Carolina, that there are some people that have the capacity for forgiveness, the capacity for redemption, and the capacity for love. And we have to challenge those people that ought to have some moral authority when they step out on the stage and talk about what it is that we ought to be doing. I mentioned President Obama because as I said, he's the president of the empire. And that is progress. But you know, when you're deciding every Tuesday who's going to live and die without due process, when you're killing people with drones without due process, you don't have more authority. I went to Jesse Jackson's mother's funeral on Monday, and I thought about a story that Jesse told back in 1988 at the Democratic Convention. I thought about it when Obama was speaking, and Jesse always tells a story about his grandmama. He says, grandmama would say, shut up! And you shut up. And you didn't shut up because she could hurt you, although she could. You shut up because she was right and she loved you. We don't have the moral authority in this country to tell people to be peaceful. Because it's trickle-down violence. It's trickle-down violence. We have to challenge that trickle-down violence. We have the progressive movement in this country is about bringing people together, is about respecting people's humanity, is about fighting endless wars. It's about giving people equal opportunity. Nikki Haley said, the shooting upset me because it upset my kids, like the rest of us didn't have kids. Yet she wouldn't sign the bill, wouldn't take the money from the federal government for Medicaid expansion, like hundreds of thousands of people aren't dying because they don't have health insurance. They don't die in a hail of bullets, but they die. She doesn't have moral authority. Her and Scott, well, your governor, who's been in South Carolina a lot lately. Well, he's not going to make it through South Carolina. We'll send him back to y'all pretty soon. No, we don't want him either. He's been there a lot. It's a hell of a thing. You know, people come up and say, well, how the hell did Dylann Roof learn to kill? And I live in Columbia, South Carolina. I'm an ex-captain in the military. My daddy was in the Navy for 27 years. I've had three brothers in the Army. I've got a nephew that did two tours in Iraq, two tours in Afghanistan. If you fly into Columbia Airport tonight, you'll see a whole bunch of young kids getting ready to go off to Fort Jackson. And someone's going to ask the question, well, where did he learn to kill? I had a black vet that walked up to me and said, that wouldn't have happened if I was there. I'm saying, well, when you kicked in the door in Iraq, how did the people respond then? You think that there's no connection between what you did to those families in Iraq and Afghanistan than what Dylann Roof did in the basement of that church. And then there are the kids with Black Lives, young folk with Black Lives Matter, which I'm glad to see them out there doing what they do. I reminded somebody on the panel this morning that the movement isn't new. I talk about Jesse. Jesse said, I am somebody, same as Black Lives Matter. That the struggle against racism started when they brought the first bodies over here. And the fight goes on, and we have to reach out. And we have to listen to one another. But it can't be just coming to a rally or coming to Fighting Bob Fest or coming to the point of tragedy, getting some memorabilia, meeting, and it's good. But what happens after? You got to get involved afterwards. You got to get to know people and understand people's humanity. We have to organize. It's time to organize. I've been telling a lot of the preachers, what do? Every Wednesday night, y'all get in your churches and you have prayer meeting. But you could have teach-ins on Tuesday. Teach-in Tuesday. Teach the kids about the history. Dylann Roof knew a lot more about the importance of Emmanuel Church than a lot of the people sitting in the church. A lot of people sitting in the state, knowing how important that church was to the history of black people in this country. And right across the way, the Citadel built to defend against that church and slave uprisings. That's why that church was there. The oldest church, Mother Emmanuel, the most historic place in South Carolina. And a lot of people didn't know that church. So I know it's getting late. It's time for us to take this country. I can't say take it back because I don't know if we ever had it. It's time for us to fight back. It's time for us to go after the monuments and the symbols. I'm not so mad at somebody painting racist on the statue of John C. Calhoun because he was a racist. That speech, take it down. You got people in South Carolina, well, you know, they're going to change the names of all the streets and all the roads. I'm like, dude, and this was Glenn McConnell, who's now the president of the College of Charleston, the one that dressed up as a Confederate soldier that was once President Pro Tem of the Senate. We're going to change the name, the streets and schools and everything in South Carolina is named after a Confederate, including the black people. Think about that now. You worried about changing the names of the roads and the bridges and the buildings? Find a brown in Africa. I mean, there might be some if the British colonized that particular part of Africa or the French, but come on, this is who we are. This is the country. This is our black folks' reality. that we are descendants of kidnapped Africans. That's our legacy. That's our history. That's the history of our country. Wrap your brains around that. We're not the land of immigrants alone. Think about that when you think about everything that you know black folk go through. This idea of racial profiling and skin privilege. The clearest example of skin privilege is that young girl in Texas, the young Becton girl, who had the 200-pound cop sitting on her back at a pool party. And Dylan Roof, when they walked up to his car, they put their guns in the holster, and they took him to get a hamburger. That's skin privilege. What would happen if there had been a black man or a black kid going in a white church and killing people? They'd be mad at all black folk. The wonderful thing about what's happened after Charleston is that people have been reaching out to one another. White folks are more willing to talk about race in South Carolina, even though that's their history. But they're willing to talk about it in a different way. So reach out, organize, do teach-ins, get outside your comfort zone, talk to people that you might be afraid to talk to or might have a difference of opinion, who might make you angry, who might make you mad, but it's time to engage one another. If we really want to make this a better country for our kids and our grandkids, and it doesn't have to be like the old song, "Before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free." It ought to be about being free while you're walking on this earth. It ought not have to be just about martyrs and people dying before we come together. Before the tragedy, let's come together. And after we come together, be it for a tragedy or something is, I love fighting Bob Fest. I mean, this is my second year, but after we leave here, let's all get together and continue the fight. Continue to challenge our politicians, continue to challenge our country, continue to challenge one another. Thank y'all for inviting me. Power to the people. Right on.